Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You've heard, I'm sure, about the many women seeking congressional seats this year. Nearly 500 women are running in the midterm races, which is up from 300 women in 2012. And some 78 women are expected to run for governor, another all-time high. Among those gubernatorial candidates is a Georgia lawyer, a businesswoman, an author, and a former state representative named Stacey Abrams. If Abrams becomes the governor of Georgia, and that's no sure thing at all, she'd be the first black woman to serve as a governor in our country's history. Not to mention one of the first novelists to hold that office. Abrams is the author of a number of books under the name Selina Montgomery. And her new book, written under her own name, is nonfiction, and it's called Minority Leader. She recently spoke with The New Yorker's Jeffrey Toobin.
Now, your book is a combination of a memoir, self-help, political manifesto, and I want to try to talk about all of that, but let's start with you, okay? One theme in your book is ambition and unapologetic ambition, and there's a memorable passage where a boyfriend breaks up with you when you're in college, and you wrote on a spreadsheet what you wanted to accomplish. And the spreadsheet had columns for age, job, tasks. By 24, you would write a best-selling spy novel. By 30, you would be a millionaire running a corporation. By 35, you would be mayor of Atlanta. Like, where did that come from?
Well, I was 18, so all of those things seemed to coalesce and live in perfect harmony in my mind. By 24, I had not written a spy novel, but I wrote my first romantic suspense novel. Publishers at the time did not believe that women read spy novels or that men would read a spy novel by or about a woman, especially not one with an African-American woman as the main character. And so I decided to write my spies as in a romance novel. And so I wrote a romantic suspense novel. So that one got done. I have been woefully inadequate in achieving my millionaire status, but I have hope. I have hope. I've started a few small businesses, and my goal is one day for one of them to, you know, achieve greatness, and I can hit that goal too. The mayor of Atlanta piece was really driven by my growing up years, with growing up poor, growing up understanding that government has a real role to play in how we live our lives for good and ill. And particularly at that point, I had been at Spelman College during the time of the Rodney King riots. And while everyone focused on LA, there were riots in Atlanta. They actually shut down the Atlanta University Center, which is a collection of black colleges, and Spelman College was one of them. I was very agitated. I organized my fellow students to push back against the man, complaining about how they were treating young people. And I ended up getting into a disagreement with the mayor of Atlanta, the famed Maynard Jackson, who was an amazing man. We disagreed about the role that the city had played in helping address youth poverty. And a few months later, he hired me to work for the Office of Youth Services. And that really gave me a lens into the role that the mayor could play and how to address poverty. So there was an inherent desire on my part to find the means possible to disrupt poverty, to eliminate it. And the mayor seemed like the best job I could find, where I'd seen a person of color, especially a black person, take on that job and really do some good things with it.
And you are now a candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, the demographic changes that will help the Democratic Party in the West, in the South, but it hasn't seemed to have kicked in yet. What do you see as the route to a Democratic, capital D, revival in the South?
Sure. When I became minority leader in 2010, it was at the nadir for Democrats in Georgia. We lost every statewide office. We lost members of the House the day I became leader. And so I came into leadership at the worst possible moment for Democrats in our history in the South, especially in Georgia. The demographic shifts have happened. The challenge has been having the candidate and the campaign and the infrastructure to leverage that demographic change. My campaign is very different than most campaigns being run in the South, being run across the country.
How so?
Most campaigns will raise money and hold it, really focusing on the last few weeks of the election. And typically, field apparatus, the field organization, waits until the general. My belief is that we have to actually cultivate relationships with those potential voters now, because they do exist. We have the numbers. What we haven't had is the intentionality of investing in those voters and engaging them in a way that makes them believe that voting is a realistic option for them. Because if they haven't seen change, and if they haven't seen anyone bother to ask for their vote in a real, thoughtful, and meaningful way, they stay home. And so our campaign, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, our local paper, called our strategy unconventional, because we have been very direct about investing early in the kind of infrastructure and the kind of cultivation of non-traditional voters that you normally wouldn't see until a general election.
What about the role of race? I mean, there has never been an African-American governor of Georgia. There are no African-American governors in the entire country now. Why is that?
In part because there has been a I don't know if it's a disengagement or a disbelief, but getting people of color into executive positions has been difficult at every strata of government. Race has a role to play. It has a role to play in even conversations about my viability for this office, because when you haven't seen something happen, it's hard to believe it's possible. President Obama, Deval Patrick, Doug Wilder are all emblematic of what is possible. But for me, there is absolutely no clear roadmap to this. There's never been a black woman ever elected to lead a state in the history of the U.S. And so I do talk about race. I think it is a critical part of my campaign, not because I only want to win a certain segment of the population, but because that distinction illuminates the other challenges we face.
How much of the potential for your campaign relates to Donald Trump? What do you think? You know, it's widely believed that this coming year is going to be a good Democratic year. Do you think that's true in Georgia? Do you think it's true because of Trump?
I think the Trump effect is that people understand in an acute and real way how vital voting is. Every day brings a new, fresh horror that demonstrates how important voting is. But my campaign is not about running against Donald Trump. I think the way Democrats win is by using the enthusiasm generated by how terrible he has been as a president for so many of the communities we speak for. And so I see Trump and his effect on this election more as creating a zeitgeist that allows me to really explain why voting this year matters. But his mismanagement of our country is not the core reason for my, you know, for my race.
There's a one of the main causes you've been involved in, both as a legislator and now as a candidate, is voting rights and the assault on voting rights from the Trump administration, but also your efforts to expand it in Georgia. What are you doing in Georgia?
So for the last few years, I have been the leader of a group called the New Georgia Project. In 2014, we registered a little over 86,000 voters of color throughout the state of Georgia. And between 2014 and 2016, we've registered more than 200,000. And to put that in context, in 2014, there were 800,000 unregistered people of color. So we've tackled about a quarter of those numbers. But in addition to the registration piece, we've had to fight hard against voter suppression. And that has included having almost 35,000 registrants, including some of our own, who were illegally canceled by the Secretary of State. And because of our efforts, because of my organization, we were able to fight. It took us 2 years, but we were able to prove that the Secretary of State had illegally canceled these registrations and he was forced to restore them. And so I've been very proud of the work we've done. And this campaign has led me to separate myself. We've now spun off the New Georgia Project. It's its own standalone 501c3. But more work has to be done, including making certain that the Secretary of State, who was the architect of much of this voter suppression, does not become the next governor of Georgia, which is something he's trying to do.
And don't you sometimes think, You know, when you look at an issue like voting rights, we're back to the days of Martin Luther King, and there is just blatant racism in what public officials are doing.
I wouldn't say we ever left. I think greater attention is focused because of the changing demography of our state, and the tactics are changing. But there has always been an attempt to limit whose voices could be heard in the body politic. And I do think it is emblematic of a great deal that in the year that we recognize the assassination of Dr. King, that across this country we are fighting so many entrenched battles on the conversation of voter suppression.
Let me ask you a sort of a big picture question as we come to the towards the end here, is that, you know, the subtitle of your book is How to Lead from the Outside and Make Real Change. But isn't the message of our politics today that it doesn't matter how you lead? All that matters is whether Democrats or Republicans win, because the gulf between the parties is so great right now. I mean, is it realistic to think that you're ever going to persuade Republicans of anything? I mean, aren't we so locked in to a partisan divide now that only the voters can make a choice? After that, people are just locked into their positions?
I started writing this book in 2015, 2016, when I first started having the thought. And while the political piece is an inherent part of who I am and what I do, leadership is much bigger than being in politics. Leadership is about understanding that there are challenges that you see that need to be addressed. And this can be in your company. This can be in your community. It can be in your politics. It might be in your family. And when it comes to political leadership, my job as minority leader was a very specific one. It says in the title, I have fewer votes than the other guy who's the majority leader. And my job was to still get things done. And I was very good at it. I worked with Republicans. I negotiated good deals. I was able to navigate differences of ideology, differences of region, differences of economics. And one of the ways I did so was by not diminishing what they believed and why they believed it. That insight is actually a powerful tool that we can use, especially in our politics.
Stacey Abrams, author of Minority Leader, How to Lead from the Outside and Make Real Change, candidate for governor of Georgia. Thanks for joining us at The New Yorker.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeffrey. This has been delightful.
Stacey Abrams is a candidate to be the governor of Georgia, and she's currently facing Stacey Evans in the Democratic primary. Polls close May 22nd.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.